Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have been reviewing Yeshayah, Isaiah 17 and 18, where God told us that the Syrian war was going to culminate with Islamic terrorists turning Damascus into a heap of twisted rubble, where God told us that ultimately the government of Damascus is going to fall, where he told us that this was going to lead to Israel being forced to give up the West Bank, being narrowed at the waist so that the country was no longer sustainable, to God telling us that at this time that he's going to harvest his children, that he is going to have a secondary, a smaller harvest to remove his children before the onslaught of horrible war. He then distinguishes the difference between his world and man's world at that time, saying that that in his world there are no traces of religion. At that point, he explains that Muslims by the millions are going to flood into Israel, and that this torrent of Muslims is going to be so vicious, so loud, so clamorous, so riotous, and their desire for destruction and their hatred so extreme that Israel's defensive fortifications will fail. And that he himself is going to have to engage to blow away the Muslims, probably 150 million of them. He then explains why he allowed them to enter Israel, why they were allowed to destroy and kill prior to God finally saying that's enough already, out of here, was because most Israelis had forgotten about their relationship with him. They no longer knew him, no longer trusted him, no longer relied upon him. And so he left them to their own devices until it reached a point where if he had stayed away any longer, then his promises to Abraham to ultimately reconcile his relationship with Yisrael would have been for naught. And so he engaged and he blew them away. And he explained all of this to us. And then he told us why he was so adverse to Islam. And said, you know, I'm not going to tolerate those who invade my land, try to conquer it, try to plunder it. This is the reward for those whose religion is based upon the notion that booty is lawful and good and that they have been called to war on behalf of their wannabe God. So he exposes and condemns Islam. From that point, we get this warning, this condemnation of a nation that could only be the United States of America. There's about 30 references to things that are unique about America in the condemnation. And what's interesting here now is that God is going to describe what occurs in Sheol, which most people would know as hell. God says very little about what's there. He does explain the kind of torment that Yahusha's soul received on Matzah when it was sent into Sheol, and is quite explicit in how horrible that was going to be, and how horrible it was, and how the demons lashed out at him, demeaning him, mistreating him in Sheol. Well, now he's going to explain exactly what's going to happen to this nation. He has just warned about what their experience is going to be like in Sheol. Now, this is important for a couple of reasons. One is that we don't know a lot about the place of separation from God. And here we're going to find out something about it. And second of all, the country that he's addressing is the United States of America. And to end up in Sheol, you have to have overtly leagued with Satan. You have to have deliberately harmed God's chosen people. You have to have led people away from Yahweh, from his Torah, from his covenant. And you can't be a victim and end up in Sheol. There are no victims in Sheol. There are perpetrators there. And maybe it's this national problem that we have as America. We've lost our character because we focus on the victims as opposed to those who are victimizing them. That puts us in this position, this lack of judgment. But this is where we find ourselves. And God is describing the nature of this place and what got these people into this situation. And he says, indeed, before the approaching presence of the harvest, as the budding blossoms form and become perfect. So he's describing the ultimate harvest. This is no longer a secondary gleaning. This is God's absolute favorite harvest. It's not his first harvest. The first harvest was on Bukurim, which is firstborn children. That was fulfilled in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah. The secondary harvest or gleaning is fulfilled on Teruah, which is the fifth of seven invitations to meet with God. That will occur just as Israel is being leaned as a nation and just before the tribulation turns into global war, beginning with the invasion of by Muslims into Israel. This harvest is the final harvest. This is the harvest that takes place in association with Yahweh's return. It is in harmony with the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippur, when it's fulfilled in year 6000, Yah 2033, just a matter of, 19 years from now. And so, excuse me, in this particular harvest, what God is saying is that his children, the Israelites, are finally being prepared, that they have seen God intervene. They have seen him on Mount Moriah establish his banner. They've seen him lift up the 10 statements of stone. They've returned to the Torah. They've heard God's shofar, his ram's horn. So they've seen God act. They've read his testimony. They've heard his name. They know him. And they're being prepared as budding blossoms, becoming perfect, so that they can be gathered in at this harvest before this harvest occurs. But at that same time, there's hardened and unfit, immature, unharvestable souls that have to be dealt with. That's what he tells us. And the country that he is assailing, that he says has to be dealt with, that he's given the warning to, is America. Hardened and unfit, immature, unharvestable, especially sour, that have to be dealt with, treated in the way that they deserve. Then God says, for becoming and for clustering together as wild birds of prey, as glistening eagles, falcons, and hawks, as Netzach. It appears that God is speaking of our military attacking Israel, that we send our birds of prey. Just as I shared earlier, our F-15 Eagles, our Falcons, our Hawks. And we prey upon the dead. He says, the insignificant and the worthless who squander and trivialize, which is what we're doing, will be stopped. They're going to be taken down. They'll be banished. They'll be snuffed out. And so then, with regard to the forsaken castaways, they will be completely rejected and totally removed, cut off and separated. This is a nation that claims to be Christian. This is a nation which sings God Bless America. This is a nation that has lost its way, that God says that is estranged from me, is acting badly, becoming vultures, preying upon the dead, birds of prey, killing where they ought not kill, and particularly preying upon those God loves. So this begins by telling us that Israelites and Yehudim are being prepared so they can be gathered in by Yahweh on the day of reconciliation, the day when God will restore and reaffirm his covenant relationship with his chosen people, the day that the covenant will actually be renewed, a day still 19 years into our future. They will be perfected and completed in the knowledge that Yahweh is God and that He honors His promises. By this time, these individuals will have embraced the conditions of the covenant by having distanced themselves from their prior religious and political affiliations. They will have come to trust and rely upon Yahweh based upon what they have witnessed Him doing on their behalf. And they will finally observe the Mikre, the invitations to be called out and to meet with God as they were intended, walking to their Heavenly Father while being perfected in the process. You know, this weekend, Sunday evening, we celebrate Pesach and all day Monday. So that on Monday evening, we celebrate the day of perfection of matzah, where the fungus of yeast is removed from our souls. So that the following evening, we can celebrate being born into Yahweh's family, to the first family, as His children on Bukurim. But there will be others who will not observe these days. There'll be others who denounce the Torah in which these days are presented. There'll be those who will have a whole different covenant, one unrelated to the God who created the universe. And a vast number who will remain hardened and sour, unfit for heaven. God is addressing here Americans. And they're going to be dealt with receiving what they deserve, which is to be banished and excluded from His company. At this time, which is deep into the second half of the tribulation, and for the crime of overtly trying to destroy His land and people, it is likely that these souls will be destined for Sheol. This pronouncement and the one which follows suggest the consequence of eternal separation. There is a time. It's associated with the mark of the beast. It is delineated in Daniel as well as 3.5 years from the end of the tribulation at its midpoint, where the option, which is the most prevalent outcome today, that souls who disassociate from Yahweh, who do not consider His Torah, who are ignorant, who are victimized by religion and politics, that they simply cease to exist. But a time will come in the midst of the tribulation. Well, that will no longer be an option. You'll either be with God or against Him. So here in the 5th verse of the 18th chapter of Yeshayah, Isaiah, there are two very distinct groups of people. On one side, we witness those who are beginning their life in the covenant. They are just starting to blossom and to grow as a result of finally recognizing Yahweh, as a result of answering His invitations to participate in His family. But on the other side, we see individuals who remain unreceptive, indeed unfit and rotten. From this point, the text becomes a bit more challenging. What are we to make of the rotten and hard-headed sourpusses who have become unfit for the impending harvest? Why must they be dealt with in a manner consistent with what they deserve? Why are these castaways stopped and taken down before being rejected and removed? It is assumed by most scholars that since this message has deployed agricultural metaphors, including standing grain, olives, branches, vines, blossoms, and fruit, that Natash should be translated as if it were Parak, budding blossoms. But why change words if both words mean blossom? Well, most words are common to God's testimony. Because Yahshayah was trying to describe something he'd never seen or even imagined, this is the only time Natash is deployed throughout the Torah and prophets. Its root, Netz, however, appears 4 times. It's used to present uncleaned birds of prey, specifically hawks, falcons, eagles, raptors, and vultures. In fact, Natash is simply the feminine version of nets, which is not surprising since ships and planes are typically referred to using feminine pronouns. Further, nets is related to Natsats, which describes something that shines, sparkling and shimmering in the light. This suggests that those who have earned condemnation, who must be stopped by God, are flying birds of prey. These just so happen to be the names of the U.S. military, which have been selected to describe its fighter, attack helicopter, and surveillance aircraft. The United States deploys F-15, Screaming Eagles. 473 of these are currently active. F-16, Falcons, 1,245, currently deployed as fighters. F-22, Raptors, 195, highly advanced fighters are currently deployed. HH-60, Pave Hawks, 103 helicopters. The MH and SH-60 Seahawks, 589 currently active attack helicopters. And UH-60 Blackhawks, 1,500 helicopters, are currently deployed under this depiction as a Blackhawk, in addition to E-3 Hawkeyes surveillance aircraft. And to this list of birds of prey, the Army is planning to deploy 133 Gray Eagle drones, while the Air Force is flying a fleet of 165 Predator drones, 152 Global Hawk drones, and another amply named MQ-9 Reaper drones. I'd rather doubt it's a coincidence, especially since there is a reference to them being taken down, their engines snuffed out. Well, these references to whirling and attack helicopters and birds of prey that denote fighter aircraft may be intended as symbolic. The more literal interpretation is indeed intriguing. And it is certainly consistent with the rhetoric God has deployed thus far to describe the United States. It even serves to explain the reason Yahweh will engage to protect Israel again, to stop these birds of prey. But beyond all of this, it ties up an important loose end. It would be unlike Yahweh to denounce a nation without also revealing its fate. America's military will be taken down while its people are forsaken as castaways, removed from God's presence, separated and discarded. It is, after all, what those who have abetted the pillaging and destruction of Yahweh's chosen people and promised land deserve. I shared with you earlier that if I were you, I would stop voting. God is paying attention. And when you vote for the likes of George W. Bush and Barack Hussein Obama, who seek to pillage Israel, then you're on the wrong side. And you're going to be held accountable. Don't do it. You know, the nice thing about Yahweh and all of these instructions, if you have done so in the past, as I have done, the moment you stop doing it, you're in the right side. You're no longer a foe. Now, it may well be that Yahweh is intervening again to stop the American onslaught. It's equally plausible, considering how this fate is presented, that America fails for other reasons, just as it has many times recently. Something as simple as an electromagnetic pulse would make the nation's guidance systems, its communications, and spies, satellites inoperative, blinding the nation's birds of prey. In fact, there are references other places where the pilots of these machines are blinded so that they grow awry. So my guess is that we're looking at an electromagnetic pulse that is going to bring America's birds of prey down. Also curious, considering the inauspicious conclusion to a once proud nation, is the dichotomy between American public rhetoric and the nation's backroom maneuvering relative to Israel. A case could be made that no U.S. president has actually supported Jews against Muslims. But the most recent presidents, George Bush and Barack Obama, have orchestrated massive sales of the nation's most sophisticated weaponry to Islamic nations surrounding Israel, while at the same time constraining the flow of these very same weapons to America's supposed ally. Worse, the current administration has inspired Muslims, telling them that this is their time and that America will stand with them, not against them. This overt empowerment of Israel's Islamic enemies and simultaneous erosion of Israel's credibility has been accomplished in large part by sleight of hand. First, a mythical people called Palestinians and a mythical land called Palestine has been invented to give the impression that Jews are the aggressors and oppressors when the opposite is true. Then America's leadership has concocted a war against a tactic, terrorism, rather than Islam, naming one of the countless expressions of the religion, Al-Qaeda, the enemy. There is yet another word in this prophecy which appears nowhere else in the whole of Yah's testimony. However, since Zazalim, translated the insignificant and worthless who squander and trivialize, is considered a repudiation of Za'al, a word which is used on 8 occasions, we can more reliably define it. Those who are Zazalim, despised for being contemptuous, are Za'al, gluttonous and vile, meaningless and insignificant because they have associated with a wrong crowd from God's perspective. They lavishly squander their wealth and opportunity while trivializing that which actually matters. As a result, they will be cut off and discarded. This is exactly what Yahweh told Abraham would happen to those who seek to harm Yisrael. Further, Za'am means to be abhorred for offering the kind of food which makes people sick, serving up that which is poisonous. Zul defines those who lavish money on worthless idols. Someone who is Zula is separated. Zaha is cut loose and removed. A Zua is a terrorist and fearmonger. Za'al is someone who crawls on the ground and prostrates themselves in fear. It all seems to fit. The previous statement affirms that at this point in the tribulation, there will be only two groups of people left on earth. Israelites, individuals who engage and endure with God, and who have become Yehudim, related to Yahweh, and those who are neither of these things. The latter will be cut off and separated, which is affirmed with the words which describe the eternal anguish in Sheol as demons torment those that they had previously played for fools. It is hard for some people to deal with, but it is nonetheless true that even though humankind has had 6,996 and a half years of choice, where there have been three options, we are going to enter a period of 3.5 years, the last 3.5 years of man influencing man on earth, where there will only be two options. You see, up to this point, for the first 6,996 and one half years, men have and women have either embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant, come to know Yahweh as he has introduced himself to us, and have acted upon the conditions so as to answer God's invitations to meet with him, and they've been made immortal. They've been perfected. They've been adopted into his family. They have been enriched and empowered. That's option one. That's about 1 in 1 million people, but nonetheless, it is a really good option. I would highly recommend it. Option two is the preponderance of individuals. They've been victimized. They have been deceived. They have chosen of their own volition, however, to either be ignorant of or hostile to Yahweh's Torah testimony. If you speak of being Torah observant to them as either Christians or Muslims, or even as socialist secular humanists, they become antagonistic. And so those individuals who have been victimized by politics, religion, academia, have been misled, who are either ignorant of what God has to say or opposed to it, upon the end of their mortal lives, they will simply cease to exist. No eternal separation, no eternal torment, no penalty. They got their lives, they were given their opportunity, they squandered it. It's over. God didn't know them, they don't know God. No harm, no foul. But nothing good, nothing bad will happen beyond that point. And that's the vast preponderance of people today, and has been for over 6,000 years. But we're going to reach a period 3.5 years before the end of the tribulation. Well, that will not be one of the options. You see, God has been really clear here that he, not only did he intervene to save Israel and made it obvious that he was doing so, but that he put his standard above the mountain. He is going to reveal for all the world to see. And he said that the entire world will be informed, will be able to see his testimony, his purpose and plan. And the entire world will hear his shofar, his ram's horn, declare his existence while they're able to witness what he has to say. Everyone will be without excuse. You will know who God is, that he exists, and what he is offering. By the same token, you'll know who the beasts are, what they are offering. And humankind is going to be viewed as either aligning themselves with one or the other. There will no longer be an in-between. There will be no victims. Only those who are engaged in the covenant and those who are opposed to it. And so from this point on, everyone will endure one eventuality or the other. They will either be eternally brought together, enjoying camaraderie and discovery with Yahweh through the covenant, or they will be sent to Sheol, incarcerated forever in a black hole with their like, with similarly religious and political and militaristic individuals in league with Satan, where the very demons that sought to mislead them will be tormenting them. This is what God has to say. It's one of the very few glimpses into the place known as hell, actually called Sheol, which means to question. They shall actually be continually abandoned and forever forsaken. Azab. They will be eternally rejected and damned. Estranged to associate with demonic spirits. This was scribed in the Niphil stem, whereby the subject is actually neglected, and in the imperfect, which reveals that the fate will be ongoing and continual. Altogether, completely, and all at once, meaning there's no other option. Totally and at the same time, treated alike as one group, with a common nature and accord. For these birds of prey, the flying creatures which hunt and kill, preying upon the dead. They're rapid, they're vicious, they're violent and ravenous, voracious, and deadly creatures who will swoop in high places of the hills and mountains, sometimes used as a metaphor for those in high places, political, religious, and military leaders, and for the beasts of the realm. And they will be abruptly awakened in the summer with vexing and exasperating action taken against them. Quits all. They will be roused from the realm of the dead, consciously grieving, while others loathing them, goading over them with thorns in an extremely hot and vehement manner. Here, the call stem means that this will actually occur, while the perfect conjugation, modified by the consecutive mood, means that the awakened state and grief will be continual and thus eternal as a result of the choices they have made. It's complete. All kinds of birds of prey, flying creatures which hunt, ravenous, vicious, deadly creatures. They're going to swoop in, and all manner of beasts of the realm will be among, upon, and against them during the autumn and winter, continually ridiculing and taunting them for actually being irrational and for being consistently confused. This is Al-Kharaf. Spending the harvest time reproaching and scorning them, vilifying them, mocking them, and insulting them, and actually treating them with contempt for being unable to think properly and for making such poor choices. In the whole of the Hebrew lexicon, my friends, there is no more damning word than azab. It means to be rejected and estranged, especially when scribed in the Niphil imperfect, because such individuals are actually forsaken in such a way that they find themselves literally disassociated from the covenant and eternally separated from God. This damning experience is what is being presented in the words which follow, words we will consider when Shattering Myths continues after the final commercial break. Be rejected and estranged, to ultimately be separated from God. You know, those who, up to this point, cease to exist. You know, you don't know God. God doesn't know you. You've been duped by religion, been duped by politics, whatever you've been duped by. You know, you've been told that the Torah no longer matters and there's a new covenant and it's entirely different and all you have to do is believe. If you've been duped by that stuff, then you're not going to be azabed. You're going to cease to exist, but you're not going to be separated, rejected, or damned by God. To be azab is, that's bad. That puts you over there in that category of eternally incarcerated. Now you got a penalty. Now you got a problem. This is not good to be azab. And when it's scribed in the Niphil imperfect, it means that the damnation, the estrangement, the rejection, the separation from God is ongoing. It's never ending. So, it's not a good thing here. Now, an interesting aspect of azab is that it's a double entendre. It conveys the idea of being set free and being released, and that sounds really good until you realize what you've been set free from, what you've been released from. You've been set free from God, being released from the covenant. The word confirms that those who choose not to be with God, those who reject Him, will get their wish. They will be sent on their way and damned, which means to be separated. Yada azab, once completely forsaken and eternally damned, these estranged and separated souls will be forever tormented, not by God, but by the most menacing of Bahima, of beasts. You know, in Daniel, throughout Daniel, the beasts are the living epitome of the most ruthless nations. The beasts are described as the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist. The representative of Satan is referred to as a beast. You don't want to be tormented and menaced by beasts. He's talking about demons, satanic influence. And the yet flying creatures who prey upon the dead. We're talking about demons. Yahweh is speaking of Satan and his cadre of demons. He is depicting an eternity in Sheol, the realm of questioning, those who end up there because they chose in the end to be in direct opposition to God will find themselves among kindred spirits, although they're all going to be depraved ones. Based upon the implications associated with Yada, everyone will be similarly religious. They're going to be equally political, all patriotic. They're going to have a affinity for military endeavors in common. The inhabitants will all be treated alike, which is to say, there will be no distinctions, no status, no hierarchy. While most of the imprisoned in Sheol will have come from Har, high places, they will be brought down to the same level. A distinction these religious clerics, these government leaders, these military officers, as well as fallen messengers, will find particularly horrifying. the experience will be universally nauseating and miserable, with Satan's fallen envoys similarly incarcerated and described as we'd expect them to be. Bahama, Ayet. Swiftly moving, flying creatures acting like wild beasts of prey, preying upon the living dead. These two words were carefully selected to convey the kind of year-round torment. Summer, spring, autumn, and fall. That awaits those who have chosen to oppose God. Quits is scribed in the call perfect, consecutive, which reveals that those who have died in open hostility to Yahweh and to Yisrael will be abruptly awakened to a totally new and eternal reality. They will wish that they could have remained dead, because the perpetually damned will find themselves loathed by those who beguiled them, and continually vexed, annoyed, and aggravated to the point of total exasperation. Also, there is a hint of hot in the term, and it's not addressing the temperature, but instead the vehement attitude displayed by Satan's little helpers. Not in the temperature of the place, but in their approach to those that they have beguiled, to those they have played as fools. They will mock them for having thought that they could fight God. And they will have lost, all of them. We'll return tomorrow. May Yah bless.